Welcome to another episode of Witness Action Enneagram Podcast. My name is Creek, and I'm with my insondable co-host, Mari Sikora and Maria Jose Bonita.
Somebody's in Mexico.
Yeah, I'm in Querétaro, Mexico. And so Maria Jose and I are going to do this whole episode in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Just so Mario...
Can say ay caramba.
Can take a
can
break.
Can say ay caramba.
Ay caramba. Yeah. Do my Bart Simpson Spanish. Yeah.
I'll never get over that time in Valparaíso when you said ay caramba. I was so embarrassed.
Wait,
I was so embarrassed.
Story time.
Embarrassed. So Valparaíso is just a city of hills, you know, and there are these, how do you call them? Elevators?
Funiculares.
Well, that's in Spanish, but do you say that in English as well?
Well, we don't have them in English, I've only been on them in Italy.
Elevators, and, elevators that go up and down the hills. And
it's like a it goes up a rail, right? So it's not quite an elevator. It's like almost like a trolley almost, but it's much smaller, the size, closer to size.
Kind of like what they have
in Whatever. What?
Yeah. They have them at Pittsburgh as well. Yeah.
So we were there, and they sometimes stop kind of abruptly, and he was kind of surprised, and he said, "Ay caramba." you don't say that. You don't say that. At least
why don't you say that? Let's educate our audience.
That's like something... I don't know who would say that, because nobody does. It's like only somebody who has been watching a lot of TV and thinks speaking Spanish, you don't say it. unless you're making fun of something, you want to look stupid or something like that, you would say, ay caramba. But not for real.
and of course you do know I was not trying to act like I was speaking Spanish. I was doing my shtick. You know that. Come on.
Shtick.
Come on.
The adjective, Maria Jose.
Yeah, so go back to the adjective, please.
Insondable. How do you explain it in English?
That's what I want you to try to do.
Yeah, so sondear is to when you use sound to explore a place to see where it, like the eights do, like you throw like kind of a sound signal and you see where it bounces back, So you are that's kind of sondear. You sondear when it's like check out. Or you want to see what's going on there, When it's insondable, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what's going on there. How to check out, or it's hard to. Anyway, I'll have to find the
definition I have is unfathomable. I can't even say my own podcast name.
Yeah, right.
Unfathomable, something that cannot be understood or measured.
Well, that's not that.
So.
Far off.
Exactly. Listener, if you hear,
are we that way, you think?
Look at his face. He's really stumped there. Yeah, okay.
Because I think we're pretty in some ways, easy to read, aren't we?
Not always. Mm. Not always.
Interesting.
We won't get into that.
It has to do with the topic.
We won't get into what?
It has to do with the topic.
It does it.
With fives.
Okay. Sure. That's fair. I think you guys both are very straightforward in how you communicate, which I think people aren't used to that. So when you're very direct, that can people can take that as can take that as harsh or take it as like, oh, I need to be smaller. I need to shrink in their
well,
presence.
Well, they should.
And I don't know if I'm like, okay.
They bow down, Rimble. Peasant. Yeah.
Well. So people, intimidated or like, I don't know if they like me or not, or it's,
Start with the assumption of no. Yeah. On that last one.
You're not helping your brand here.
You know, I have to say that I haven't been always like this.
Like for the past, though?
What, 15 years
yes.
or so?
So the last 15 years, I've learned. Yeah. And I've started to enjoy being more direct, more straightforward. Mm. You know? And I take pleasure in doing that. And talking about things that people don't talk about. Or saying things in a way that people would not dare say. And cause a little kind of trouble or discomfort. But I don't have time to not talk about the things that you need to talk. You know, I find it boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you, Mario, for that.
I'm learning that.
You're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
I'm slowly becoming more and more harder to be around. So I already wasn't well actually guy.
The strategy works on so many levels, right? I mean, it's number one, it saves time and gets to the point, and you know, there's no misunderstanding, and it makes people leave you alone, you know. So
yeah. In my case, you know, I've realized that it works in at least two levels. Or three. So with my family, it works, at least with the family that I still live with. But and it does work with my clients. With my clients, they appreciate it. You know, I think they like it that I'm straightforward. So the more they like it, the more that it reaffirms that it's a good thing to do. You know. And with my friends, I put topics on the table that the others maybe wouldn't. And our relationships are stronger and more fun and more interesting now. And I've kind of, my friends have started to do the same, you know? So it works for me at least.
And I think on the initial first impression for people, they don't know what to do with that. So I think it's people appreciate it over time when they realize you're not just being difficult. You're not just like you're doing it out of a sense of care for the relationship and for moving the conversation forward and not just to be difficult.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so there's our transition point to five. <I don't know. laughs> Yeah. So we're coaching fives today.
We're going to talk about fives. Okay.
What's been your experience in coaching them?
I actually just finished a session. The reason I was running a little bit late today is I was wrapping up a session with a guy who's a type five.
And what was his problem?
I love working with fives. Oh, yeah, you know, we don't have enough time for that. No, he's nothing. You know, nothing out of the ordinary, but one of the things I like about working with fives is that they too say what they think, right? And it can, you know, as you were pointing out, it can be difficult for people to, you know, to read if they're not used to it. Now, of course, the big challenge of fives is that sometimes they just don't say what's on their mind, right? They don't, you know, they don't talk about things. But when they do, you know, one of the things that, again, I would consider refreshing is that they will just tell you, okay, well, here's what it is, right? These are the facts. This is the reality. This is how it is. They're not hung up on the emotional part of communication, which again, at times, you know, you need to be sensitive to people and, you know, and even with us, I mean, if a client is, you know, having a bad day or, you know, their mother just died or something like that, you know, I'm not going to say, okay, but so what, let's get
That's
to the
bullshit.
Point here. You know, I mean, obviously, obviously you got to be human and, you know, kind to people. And you know, most fives will do that as well, but sometimes they can forget, right? I mean, sometimes they can struggle with that. So that's one of the challenges of fives is, you know, not overdoing that directness, okay, when they do communicate.
Yeah.
It's one challenge.
I also like coaching fives, and it is exciting to me to be able to help them articulate how they see things and kind of build rapport with them in a way that many people struggle to do with them. Because they're hard to read, but when you know there are five, you can just know certain things and you understand them. And you don't judge them so much, like they don't care or that they don't have emotions and things like that. So I think that they value that. The other day I was working with a team and I was doing like a personalities at work program, and I was talking about the nine types. And when I talked about the five, and I said, which is kind of one of the derailers, and I said, they're not aware of these surroundings, and it has to do with not nurturing relationships as well, but it's like they think that people will come to them because they have their door open, but people just do not go through the door, and there's something there, the distance that they create that they're not aware of. And the whole group looked at each other and they immediately thought about someone who they had worked for, which did exactly that, you know, and not just that, it was the other traits of the five. But I think that thing of thinking that people will come to them, and if they don't, it's because they don't want to, they don't need it, they need to understand pretty quickly and do something about it to build that relationship, to nurture it so that people feel comfortable coming to them.
The thing to remember about fives is, so their strategy is striving to feel detached, okay? And in a lot of the literature about fives, it talks about their, you know, their thoughtfulness, you know, they're the investigator or the thinker or, you know, whatever the name is. But I think that one of the challenges with the literature of the Enneagram is that most of the fives who were the kind of prototypes for the descriptions tend to be pretty intellectual people, right, who are drawn to this kind of work. And you see this with all the types, right? You see descriptions of a biased sample in a way. What I find with fives is that, yeah, most of them, especially the, you know, accomplished ones that, you know, Maria Jose and I would end up working with, they are thoughtful and they're intelligent and they're smart and they're curious, but not all fives are, right? I've met some fives who are not that smart and not that, you know, skillful at thinking about things. But what does, you know, mark them is this need to engage with the world through a feeling of detachment, right? Which sounds contradictory, okay? But they're trying to create their way of coping with the world. Their way of interacting is through creating an emotional or an emotion-free buffer between themselves and the world so that they can, you know, step back and, you know, kind of protect themselves. Right. Now, this means they go into their head, but it doesn't mean that they're skillful at going into their head all the time. So that's the point I want to make about fives.
Like, I hear people always say, like, oh, I'm in my head, or I need to get out of my head. Like, what do
you
mean? You
can think
by
a lot,
that?
But think poorly.
Yeah. I mean, that's the distinction I was making. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, when we talk about going into your head, it's okay, I'm going to, instead of engaging with the world through action, through conversation, through, you know, emotion, I'm just going to kind of step back from it and not engage with it, but think about it. Okay. And like Maria Jose said, just because I'm thinking about it doesn't mean I'm thinking about it skillfully, right? A lot of fives end up as conspiracy, you know, minded folks. I find that actually, let me be careful. I don't want to say a lot of fives, but it is something you see in some fives, particularly the transmitting five for some reason. I'm not sure why, but a lot of, you know, conspiracy thinkers, you know, are transmitting fives not all transmitting fives are conspiracists, but anyway. So it's not skillful thinking, right? It's not true investigation. It's not true thoughtfulness. But the key thing is they emotionally separate, which can lead to a lack of empathy, right? So Elon Musk, for example, transmitting five, okay? No doubt about it, transmitting five. And recently said that, you know, the biggest problem in Western civilization is empathy, right? Which is a, you know, a horrific thing to say. And I'm not suggesting that all fives believe that. I mean, it's kind of the definition of psychopathy. But I'm not suggesting all fives think about that.
So
but
it's not the lack of empathy. You're saying that there is empathy? That's the problem?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. It's empathy. Empathy is the problem, is what he said. Yeah. Thank you.
Interesting.
And it's a, you know, almost every Bond villain is a type five, and particularly a transmitting five, right? And again, I want to be, you know, I don't want to say that all fives are Bond villains. Some of them are wonderful, sweet, loving people, right?
But they are either conspiracy theorists or villains.
Or Bond villains in particular.
I'm joking.
Yeah, they're not all Bond villains. Some of them are conspiracy thinkers.
Or just villains.
Yeah, just villains in general. No. That's not what we're saying. We're punchy. It's the end of the week, a Friday afternoon here. All right. Maria Jose's been drinking sangria. So, all right. So, and so is Creek, you know.
You're making things up. Okay.
I am. Yeah, I am. So,
like a transmitting five? No. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I believe it to be true. So, no.
What is it about those things? Like this archetype of Bond villain and, you know, it's conspiracy theory. What is undergirding that the detachment? How does it relate to detachment?
So there's a couple of things. Yes. And again, we're talking about, look, this is the equivalent of saying that, outlaw motorcycle bikers tend to be eights, you know, kind of thing, right? I mean, we're not saying that all eights are that, but we're talking about kind of the darkest reaches of, you know, this profile. When you're separating from your emotion, it can lead to cruelty, right? It can lead to indifference. It can lead to a lack of empathy. And, you know, and so thus Elon Musk, is saying empathy is the problem because he doesn't feel it clearly for people or doesn't seem to. And so if you separate from your emotions, then you're dependent on interpreting the world through your thinking. And if your thinking is not skillful, you're going to go to some weird kind of twisted places, and you can get to the point where you can justify cruelty and a variety of other things. And because you don't have the empathy to steer you back in the right direction, you can end up, you know, becoming a Bond villain, right? Or Dr. Evil from, you know, Austin Powers kind of thing. So
how do we get out of there?
Yeah. How do we get out of the Bond villain thing? Yeah. So let's go back to normal fives.
Yes.
Okay.
Creek has a question first.
Does Creek have a question? He's looking pensive. Yeah, he's looking five-ish deep in the dark.
I'm thinking and I read books. Which, I mean, kind of lends to my question a little bit of, like, you said there was already some sort of a bias when in the original kind of descriptions of fives. And I think there's been a lot of mistyping. And I've heard fives say, it's like, I have lots of emotions.
Yeah.
Right? But you're also saying, but they're disconnected from these emotions. And so,
so what do they say after they say they have lots of emotions? What do they typically follow that up with?
I don't know. I don't know what they say afterwards.
Okay. So what I have heard them say is, but I need to separate from it or I'll explode or something bad will happen. Right. So they're there. And again, look, a normal five loves their family, you know, has, you know, emotion and all that sort of thing. These things are always about fault lines, right? These things are always, you know, it's like with the eight, okay? And not every eight is walking around angry and ready to punch people all the time. But when the pressure builds up, that's the kind of behavior you're likely to see. And so the same thing with fives, you know, they can be engaged with people, they can be loving, they can be caring, and, you know, all these other sort of things. They can appreciate beauty and, you know, and when the pressure builds up, they start to detach from it as a way of coping, okay? So they kind of take that stuff and put it in a box, so to speak, right? And that's the striving to feel detached. Right? Now, when it's a healthy version of that, it becomes more like the Buddhist non-attachment, where you're experiencing your emotions, but you're not holding on to them, okay? And so that's the ideal, you know, that the five and really all of us should be working toward. But again, the coping mechanism is to be detached.
Yeah, and one of the ways in which they think they will be able to detach is to kind of understanding the world better. So if I understand it, I'll be able to kind of, as you said, engage with it through this feeling of detachment. So I like to think that they want to build a model of things. So that I can understand it and be, in my mind, skillfully engaging with it. And many times that process of modeling takes too long. So they're thinking too much about it instead of doing something about it. They want to gather more information. They want to kind of make it more robust. So they think. But it's not for the sake necessarily of thinking or knowing more. They want to know more so that they can understand things and not feel overwhelmed. It's like this feeling of overwhelming, it's like feeling overwhelmed. It's something they want to avoid. And they're very sensitive. So when they, when you think that they are not feeling, it's usually that it's a way to defend themselves because they're so sensitive that they need to build a wall.
Yeah, and that is an important point, right? That sometimes there is almost this hypersensitivity. It's kind of like, you know, described with some people who are on the spectrum. You know, it's this super sensitivity that makes them sort of withdraw and that sort of thing. Now, again, I'm not saying that all fives are autistic or anything like that, or all people on the spectrum or fives, but you know, it's that same sort of experience.
Yeah. Right?
What Maria Jose said about modeling is important because that's what fives can fall into the trap of doing, is modeling instead of engaging and, you know, taking action. And to get back to your question about, well, what's the connection to conspiracy thinking? It's an over modeling. Right? It's looking, it's filling in the gap of ambiguity or ignorance with an assumption, okay, which is, you know, how that kind of thinking works. Okay, you know, there's point A and there's point D. I've got to put in points B and C, and I might just be making them up in my head. So, we need to be careful about that.
So the other thing that pops in my head is like attachment theory. And how do you, obviously you can't say stop being detached, and like having a secure attachment with someone is an important part of being a healthy human. So what does it look like for a five to feel non-attached, but like help themselves and those around them feel securely attached?
Attachment theory is a whole thing that I'm not going to get into because I, it's more complicated than that, and I'm really uncomfortable with kind of direct correlations to things like attachment theory and object relations and all that to the types. But
say, I think in simple words, they have a lesser need for attachment. Yeah. I think, and they act as if others had the same need they do. So that's why they don't feel this need to nurture relationships that much or things like that. So I think that they can have what, for them, it's a healthy attachment. Mm. because they don't need more than that. It doesn't mean that they all do.
Yeah. Which is what we all do.
Yeah.
I mean, twos expect other people to have as much need for connection as they do, right? And so that's human. And but you're right, fives often have a, you know, less of a need for that feeling of connection.
Yeah, and they think others do too, so they neglect nurturing those relationships or building those attachments more intentionally, unless they realize that they have to. But on autopilot, they would do the same. So I don't want to depend on people. I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to, because I don't want other people to be a burden to me. So they build relationships as if they all need it, as we all do, as you said, Mario, what they do, and they need less.
Well, I'll just throw something else in there. And I know this is kind of more of a specific personal example. But I've had experience with someone who I thought was a transmitting five, still think, where they had a very specific idea of what it was to be in relationship. And when I wasn't able to provide the level of intensity or availability, the relationship was cut off. And so maybe there's a mistyping there, but I'm just trying to compare it.
Well,
one
of the things you'll see with a transmitting five is this kind of back and forth between intensity and separation, right? So it's this, you know, I need you all at once. I need this transmitting sort of engagement, that one-to-one thing that, you know, people always think about when they think about that instinctual bias. But then then the light switch goes and they kind of off they go, right? So during that time when they have that need for intensity, they're going to expect that intensity in return. And then in that time when, you know, the light switch is off and they don't need that connection, then they're going to want you to go away, right?
Would this be a line? I mean, I guess 8 and 7 would play into that sort of dynamic in some way. Yeah,
it could, but I think it's more the relationship with the instinctual bias and the strategy, because I don't see the same thing in navigating or preserving fives.
What are some common problems? Let's get down into the coaching a little bit more.
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that it's related to the derailers and also the blind spot is their intellectual arrogance or needing to show off intellect. It's because they are kind of usually measuring themselves up with other people and they want to be experts at certain topics, and they're measuring other people in terms of how expert the other person is. And it's like a permanent competition, but not with everybody. If they don't give you any authority, they will just not pay attention to you probably, or make you feel stupid right away. But with people who can be a good competitor, they might want to just show off and demonstrate that they're better. And that's a problem.
And again, this is, I want to be real clear that any of these things we're describing are not things that all fives do all the time, right? They're problematic behaviors that we see in fives sometimes. You know, we have a list of what we call derailers and, you know, specific patterns that we see in each of the types. And most of the time, the train's on the track, right? The train's on the rail. But when it goes off track, it tends to look certain ways. And that's one of them, or that blind spot of that intellectual arrogance is also there.
Yeah, and when they are, I don't know, in a meeting and there's a topic that they know about, they might go on forever talking about it, you know? And the thing is that it's not like my experience or this is how I, no, it's like, this is how things are and I'll tell you about it, you know? So it might end up being just too much. People might lose interest, or just too abstract and not personal enough to be interesting enough.
I'm going to try to keep on this coaching thing, but I will admit that the five is a bit of a blind spot for me, still trying to find the edges of it. And so like for that, for instance, how do you determine what's transmitting and what's that, just the five found their area of expertise and they're going? Like, how do you turn those dials? Because I mistyping between five and seven happens a lot.
Yeah, I think that in this case, there's a way in which they talk that it's more detached. You know, it's less personal. It's more theoretical. It's more, as I said, about how things are. And I'm teaching you about it. I'm showing you the truth, or I'm showing you what I think, or what people think, or the experts think. But it's, you can tell that they're trying to teach you a lesson almost, that they want to demonstrate that they know without making, as I said, making it personal. It's hardly ever a personal kind of reference there, in my experience.
Yeah. This is, so it's a great question, Creek. How do you take a particular behavior that can be seen in different types and understand what it says about that individual's Enneagram type? Okay. For example, I can go on a bit, you know, about things that, you know, I know about and, you know, think I know about, right?
Just a bit.
But when I do it, it feels like I'm poking you in the chest, right? When a five does it, it doesn't feel that way. It feels more professorial, usually, right? It's more like I'm trying to educate you and in a more restrained way than it might come off from a, you know, an eight or a different type doing the same behavior.
But look, from my end, when I see you, I also think you're trying to teach someone, the other person, a lesson, you know?
But not in a professorial way.
Yeah, but you do it in a way that you use real examples. You try to put yourself in the other person's shoes, telling the other person something that will be useful to them to kind of integrate that idea.
Sure.
And use your own examples all the time. So it's not that abstract. You make it very practical. Professorial, like you're like higher up and all of that, but but more engaging.
Like, I'm charming when I'm being obnoxious, right, is what you're saying.
No. You're not understanding me.
So intellectual arrogance, that still feels like a poke in the chest. Like, give me another analogy.
It can be, so sometimes it can be, you know, more professorial, but it, again, we're describing the, you know, the worst case here. It can feel more like a disinterested, pulling the wings off of a fly, kind of thing, right? Where I am coolly and coldly dissecting you with my words to make you feel stupid, right? It just has this different sort of tone about it most of the time when a five does it and when an eight or somebody else doesn't. Okay? And this is why it's tricky. I mean, you can't just take one thing and say, you know, oh, well, they're intellectually arrogant, so they must be a five. Okay, no. There's, you know, people of all types that are intellectually arrogant, but it's something that we see that particularly trips up fives if they're not careful.
I remember of a five who was kind of gentle most of the time in conversations until there was somebody who was pretending to know and didn't really know. And he would destroy the other person, you know, make them feel stupid, expose them, you know, like, don't come with those things. So it was fine until he was triggered by one of those situations, one of those people, and would be really tough and show them kind of use all the artillery and show them that he knew more.
And I want to go back on, you know, what I said earlier, and I think, Creek, you're right. There can be some connection to aid on this, right? And so there can be this, hostility that comes up. And it is that sort of, yeah, I'm going to use this strategy of striving to feel powerful to make you suffer. But again, it feels different, right? I mean, it just feels affectively different when a five does it than when a different type does it. So, now, there's other issues, right, for fives, okay? And, we can certainly go on, with that. One of the things I see, with fives is their tendency not to share what's on their mind and under-communicate, so people don't know what they're thinking, right? And end up becoming frustrated, especially if it's the person's boss, right? I've heard, a number of people use the word inscrutable about different fives, I just don't know how to read this person. I don't, so it makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they think of me. And, and ironically, the five's not even thinking about them, right? Which can be the problem, And
it's like a robot.
Well, come on.
I've heard that,
but it can feel that way.
I've heard that when in 360s, when people talk to me about fives, many times they say they're good, they're this, they're that, and to me they feel like a robot because just I can't read their feelings.
So there is that, and they need to they need to recognize, again, to Marie Jose's earlier point, because they don't need that from people, they just assume that other people don't need it either. And so they have to remember that, other people need a human connection. And so I have to give it to them. I have to step out of my zone. I have to stop, again, like we all do, assuming that people think, feel, and act the way we do, and meet them where they are and give them what they want, which is a bit more attention, a bit more, here's what's going on in my mind, a bit more thoughtfulness and consideration at times. So that's a huge part of it. Just get out and talk to people, right? Just walk around, talk to people, say hello, have a non-transactional conversation with them.
Yeah, and I just want to make a comment here. It's not that they don't need that connection at all. I think they need less than most other people, but they do need it. And but going back to the engagement, it can be like going out of your office and saying hi, or just setting up weekly meetings with a team or with particular individuals of the team so that they leave you alone the rest of the week. Because many times when I've coached fives, it's like, oh, this person is just, they want to talk all the time and it feels overwhelming, so they avoid it. But then people want to talk to them even more. So setting up a weekly or bi-weekly or monthly meeting solves a lot of the problems because it's a structured time that I know that will end at some point after a few minutes. And they leave me alone the rest of the week. When they see that, they get it.
Yeah. I had this client that I met with prior to this recording said that very thing to me, right? He said, I schedule one-on-ones with my people and it's a pain in the neck. And he says, it's a lot of time and, I don't wonder if it's, truly necessary. But if I don't, they're bugging me every couple of hours. Right. So the irony of this is, when we work with fives, we say, look, you'll get more detachment if you connect more consciously and strategically, because they won't be bugging you every couple of hours. Right. Because they're going to get what they need in that time that you give them. So that's a big lesson for fives, is that if I manage my interactions with people strategically and proactively, I get more space when I need it. So that's one of the key things. Go ahead.
Can we touch on real quick? I mean, thinking about all the words that you used to describe the types, I would say detachment is the one that it can feel negative. Detachment feels negative. All the other have a positive connotation, but detachment feels like a negative one. Just for the people that maybe just be tuning into this episode, like talk about detachment real quick.
What I have found is that fives typically don't have a problem with it, right? And fives, you know, have say to me that it's accurate, right? Now, there are times when detachment is really, really good. Okay. There are times when we need, you know, as a parent, you need to both be loving and attentive and caring and capable of detaching from emotional states, either because if you don't, you'll get angry and strangle your child, or you'll baby them, right? You'll spoil them. So there are positive positive things about this. I hear you that it sounds more negative. But I don't know that I've ever had an actual five say, yeah, I don't think that's right, or I don't think that's fair. I think that, honestly, I think it says more about the people that have an issue with it than what the five experiences. That's what I think. Marie-Jose, do you see it the same way?
I agree. And I was thinking that the... I don't know, at least in my culture, probably outstanding would be even worse or powerful. So I think it's relative.
Yeah.
That's relative.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to explain the value of detachment when you when there's less of a load compared to powerful, for example.
Yeah.
Powerful, it's just people, it's charged in my experience. But detachment, it's you know, not too bad.
Yeah, that's my experience as well. It's a cultural thing, it's a, you know, an individual. So other things that fives can wrestle with, okay? So there's always going to be about being slow to act. Okay, that's, you know, a challenge that almost all fives have is that there's this aspect of I will engage if I just get a little bit more information, if I, you know, collect my thoughts a little bit more, you know, whatever it is, or I just, you know what, I'm just kind of checking out, right? I don't need more information. I just don't care. I don't want to engage with the world. There can be a tendency to value the abstract over the real, the idea of a human to the human itself, right? You see, so the show House, right? The TV show House, about the doctor who was, you know, it's based on Sherlock Holmes, another great five, you know, sort of character. He wouldn't want to meet with people, right? He would avoid meeting with the actual patient, and he would deal with the patient through the intermediaries of the, you know, the doctors that worked for him, because he felt that engaging with the patient themselves clouded his judgment by putting emotion in place, you know? And that might be fine when you are trying to figure out medical mysteries, okay? But when it comes to actually engaging with the world and the rest of your life, that's a problematic behavior. Right. So fives need to remember that the thing in their mind is not the thing itself. It's kind of the same way that sevens can, you know, experience something in their head and live it in their head and feel the excitement of it in their head. And it becomes the substitute for the thing itself, right? So again, it gets back to what Maria Jose said about modeling. You know, I create this model of a person in my brain, and that's good enough. That's really the person. And they don't realize this is actually flesh and bones on the person.
Yeah.
I don't think we often don't think of fives as people of excess, but especially like lines to seven and eight, both have a tendency towards some level of excess. Now, it doesn't mean material excess necessarily for the five, but
it can be mental excess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, that's one I, so look, the vice of the five traditionally is greed, right? It's a stinginess, a holding on to. It's I have to have mine. And, you know, that's not necessarily excess because most fives are kind of minimalists, okay? But we do see in the transmitting five a tendency to overdo. They'll have huge book collections, huge record collections, huge, you know, even collections of clothing or whatever it is, you know, that they might sort of take on. It can be there, that excess.
I was thinking about that modeling of people, trying to understand people and how when the other person's behavior doesn't fit the pattern they have built in their minds, they just don't know how to react. You know, it's and it's the same thing with how the world works in general. So getting more experience, kind of more in touch with how the world works by experiencing, by interacting, it's what they need to do. And that's kind of the accelerator we have for five. It's conscious practice. So that's the thing that, because modeling things helps. It does help to understand how things work, to try to understand how people operate. All of that is useful when it's combined with, when that understanding is complemented with a real world experience, hands on. And then you have a more robust or more real understanding of how things work. And for that, you need to get dirty, you know, and do it.
In whatever form that looks like, right? I mean, you know, just getting out and engaging with people, you know, walking around the office or, you know, talking to people. You know, people talk about, you know, fives getting into their bodies and so forth. And that is important, you know, exercise, you know, whatever it is. So they don't just seem kind of like a brain on a stick, right? But it's not just getting into their body. It's getting into the world in a way that's engaged and not just kind of walking through it untouched. And, you know, but yeah, like Maria Jose said, get your hands dirty, at least metaphorically. I also want to say that, you know, fives can be extremely accomplished people, right? Mm-hmm. Bill Gates is a great example of an Enneagram type five. You know, we mentioned Elon Musk, you know, but very accomplished guy. Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, both fives, who, you know, some of the richest people in the world. So you see very often, you know, fives who do get out and do things in the world, right? I mean, everybody thinks that, you know, oh, they're just kind of the academic or the person who's, you know, sitting back, you know, in a laboratory or something like that. Not necessarily.
What is like the typical thing, like the typical assignment that you give to a five?
I think the things we've talked about, these structured engagement, it could be going and talking to people. It needs to be structured to them, because if you tell them now just go out and greet people, to them it feels like to everybody they go to the extreme and they think that they need to be walking around all day greeting people. So one person a day or once, I don't know, it needs to be structured, or meet with your team or do one-on-ones every so-and-so. So that is one very concrete thing that I would do with some of my clients.
When you say structured, you mean time-wise or also content?
It could be content.
And it could be time-wise.
Yeah, both.
It could be both.
Yeah. Both. Yeah, because sometimes, like, what am I going to talk about? Because they, not only that they don't know what to say, but they are afraid that people will start talking about all their emotions and all their fears and all their frustration. And that feels overwhelming. So if you give them an idea of an agenda that feels safe, they will more likely do it.
Yeah. An agenda that feels safe is important. I also, when I work with fives, I make sure to talk about graceful exits from conversation, you know, because, you know, to your point about them fearing as if I'm going to be trapped, you know, if I open the floodgates of conversation, yeah. I'll never get anything done. So you say, okay, well, here's how you gracefully exit, you know, a conversation, and they feel equipped to do that, the more likely to engage. You know, one of the
Such
other
as?
Things... Well, you know, I mean, it can be anything. It can be something as simple as, you know, hey, this has been really great. I do have to run, you know, so, you know, but just a simple close like that that's non-offensive, you know, can be, you know, really good. And I'll have them identify people specifically who they can have this fear with, you know, because, you know, this one's safe, but boy, that one, man, if I start talking to them, I'll be there an hour, you know. So go into it with, hey, I only have a minute here, but, you know, and then get into the conversation. So another thing I see with fives is that you have to help them translate thought into action or plan into execution. So, you know, help them because they'll kind of think about a thing, a challenge that they have, and they'll lay out all the variables and all the factors. And that can be where they stop, right? I've clearly defined the problem. Okay, it's done, right? Well, okay, no, you haven't. What are the two action steps you're going to take here? Okay, and when are you going to take them by? And, you know, what's the simple next thing? So, you know, again, for example, I just concluded a session with a five, and, you know, one of his challenge was spending more time with his family. And so he said, you know, look, I've got a wife, I've got three kids. If I give them each an hour, you know, that's, you know, or an evening each, you know, that's, you know. So, and I said, okay, so let's think about what's more realistic, right? Maybe, you know, you focus on one of them one night each week, okay? And, you know, break it down into digestible steps so that it feels safe and comfortable and actionable. But there has to be some action plan that's actually actionable, right? And then you kind of have to make sure that they stick to it. That's part of the coaching.
And as we've said, with all the times we use the awareness to action process, they need to see the benefit in terms of more detachment.
Yeah.
So yeah. I will feel more detached because, I don't know, my family will be less frustrated with me. They will leave me alone the rest of the week. Or, you know, there needs to be a benefit in those terms so that I feel compelled to take this action.
Yeah.
And they do want to, I don't know, be good as we all do, or to make their families or their people, their teams feel better. So their inner resistance is this need to feel detached. So besides the desire to, I don't know, do a good job in any of those capacities, is they need to fulfill this need to feel detached. And in order to do that, you need to show them the benefit in those terms.
Yeah.
And I imagine with all the types, like the assumption is if I don't remain detached, then I will become forcibly over-attached. And when we're just being like, no, you need a little bit of attachment and your people need a little of attachment. So, like, of course fives love their family. They're not just doing it as a robot to do the family thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it is structured.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's funny because I always, you know, so many of the clients I work with, not just fives, have challenges around feeling like they're spending enough time with their family. Right. And, you know, what I always tell them is put it on your calendar. Right? You know, put it on your calendar. I'm going to spend these 2 hours with my wife. Okay. Don't tell her that. Okay. But, you know, but do it and treat it like any other meeting. And so then it becomes now they're not coming to me and saying, you know, that this is a problem for them because they want to do it.
Right.
They just don't know how. And what a coach does is says, well, here's how you do it. That's the job.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the overly attached. I'm not sure that they were trying that what they want to avoid is being overly attached. I think it's more overwhelmed. Just too much for
good
me.
Good distinction.
I can't take it all. It's too intense. It's too much, and there's no space here for all of that. So I need to keep the distance.
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and for you Insondable Fives out there. Hope you feel well represented and cared for. So talk to you next week.
So long, folks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information about Awareness to Action, their certification programs, or events, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com.